courtside of the virtual hardwood, it's the NLSC podcast, episode 314. Andrew with you once again, joined once again by Derek, a.k.a. D4-3 in the forum.
No, thanks for having me again. I just got done an NBA 2K20 game with my brother. We Pelicans versus Thunder. But what we found out right before we started the game is that I accidentally simulated a prior game. And we had been playing every game of the season. We're about 20 games in, so that kind of ruined my night.
It's weird how that happens. I've done the same thing, and there's no take backsies, and it's, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, at this point, we're like, you know what, we're this deep into the season. We don't really want to start over, so I'm just going to see if I can try to make up the loss. Of course, when it simulated, it made me lose.
Naturally, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll see what happens. We still had a fun game, and I'm probably going to post the video a little bit later. So
look out for that in the forum, of course. Yes, episode number 314. It's a day late for Pi Day, 314. So we almost had some synchronicity there, and only because we happened to miss a week as well. So it almost worked out for a bit of a fun coincidence there. Of course, in Australia it is 14-3 because we have a different date format.
Nothing ever matches up between us.
No,
I'll tell you, but we still make the show work.
Yeah, so. It's I know it's getting very late for you. It's getting into the afternoon for me, but that is the magic of the internet and the modern age that we can get on here and talk about basketball, video games, and pretty much that's all we have to talk about at the moment. Video games, in a way, because the NBA season on hold.
Yeah, I mean, unexpected. It kind of happened out of nowhere. Things escalated rather quickly, and the media has everybody going absolutely nuts about this thing too. But it's crazy because I was talking to you about this before the call. NBA 2K has been their Twitter handle. They've been running simulations of the games that would be played, and they're advertising those simulations on their Twitter handle, and people are loving it. You know, we talked on past podcasts about, you know, keeping people engaged and that brand awareness and, you know, keeping 2K or Live or whoever is doing the advertising in people's minds. That's a smart move by 2K.
It absolutely is. And
on the brand. So
The response to it has been more positive, as you've noted, as we were talking about before we started recording. And that's significant because 2K, obviously, with some of the things they've done in recent years and something they've done in recent days, in fact, as we're recording this, and we'll get to that shortly. But the goodwill hasn't always been there, and there's often a lot of snarky responses to their tweets. So that's kind of interesting, kind of cool, bit of a nice change of pace to see that something they're doing is resonating positively with the community for once.
Yeah, and, you know, the other way, it's the approach is on their tweets, they're saying things like, who do you think would have won? And it's asking for that engagement.
Good point,
you know,
yeah.
And that's key here. It's not just saying, oh, the final score, you know, 110 to 105, the Heat win. It's, you know, here's the final score. Let's hear what you think about it. Do you think this would have been the result? So I think they're just really good at doing that stuff. And that's partly why they're so strong as a brand.
Although having said that, I am surprised that there isn't more responses along the lines of what I think is you should fix your servers, because usually that's what any of their tweets invite, something about that.
Yeah, and I think part of the thing is, though, is I think people can recognize when a company is trying to do good. And yeah. I think it's pretty obvious that what they're doing, it's helping them as well, but what they're doing is trying to keep people's minds occupied during this crisis and, you know, in their minds on basketball and their minds on 2K as well. And I think they're doing a good job of it. If you actually look at the comments, and, you know, they'll say, who do you think would win? And somebody posts like a GIF of Jimmy Butler, and somebody else will be like, oh, no way and stuff. And it's getting people, you know, to talk about the NBA and NBA 2K, and it's keeping everybody active.
It goes back to what we were talking about before in the previous episode about the engagement and how Live could be doing so much more with this, even though they're in a situation where we don't know whether there's going to be a game coming out later this year or whether they're going to be returning next year. We talked about that in the previous show as well. Just keeping people engaged, as you say, and getting that conversation, and it moves away. And yes, obviously, we should be talking about the games and whether they're good and the bad, and putting out that constructive feedback. But simply just having some fun and being able to talk basketball and instill that sense of community where we're not just sniping at each other and we're not just bitching about the games and you know to be blunt about it. It's it is positive. So you have to commend them for that.
Well, we've talked about it before. 2K, you know, 2K is a culture. Like, to play the NBA 2K is a culture, and they've built that over the years with all their advertising and brand work. And Live doesn't have that culture.
No, not for years.
Not for years. And they need to. They did. I mean, you know, in the early 2000s, they did. I'll tell you that. Even later on, in the late 2000s, when they started making better steps and making better games, but it's been too long now.
Yeah.
And that old guard that, you know, that was dedicated and, you know, that culture that's gone.
Either moved on or jumped on the 2K bandwagon.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing. Exactly. I mean, me and my brother are playing 2K20, you know, do we wish we had a live game we could also play? Absolutely. But as you know, they canceled Live 20, and they may be canceling next year. So
we shall see. We shall cover that as the story continues to emerge. There is that article that the news post we talked about last week in episode number 313. Of course, was it 312 that we talked about that?
I think it was 312.
Right.
Yeah, I think it was 312. Yeah.
Well, our entire back catalog is available on the NLSC, of course, me-live.com, and a bigger selection is also available on various podcatching apps and platforms, which we will promote towards the end of the show. But yes, definitely good stuff for 2K there, which is a bit of a change from the other thing that's going on at the moment with them, and that is a lot of people getting banned from my team, getting their accounts banned for sniping for cards in the auction house and selling them for a profit. And it's been quite controversial. The first thing that you pointed out to me that is just incredible, and I already knew this, but it's just when you see actual numbers and people talking about it, it really just hammers home how much recurrent revenue my team makes. But people spending thousands of dollars on my team packs, and it's you can see why they push that mode so much, because again, the recurrent revenue they make from that mode is astonishing.
I had to share that with you right away when I saw it. You know, $3,000 one person said they spent. The other person said they spent $4,000 on my team. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder, you know, I want to know how old these people are. You know, are these young adults? I mean, they can't be kids. They can't be teenagers.
No.
I looked at the handle and, you know, obviously you can't tell what age they are. Really. Sometimes you can kind of have an idea by, you know, the content they post. But, you know, I looked at those two handles and I couldn't, you know, see anything that would tell me how old they were. But that is just an absurd amount of money. And then there's the part that's kind of ironic is, you know, 2K is getting all of this money from these modes where they're, you know, for microtransactions and virtual currency and all of this stuff. But they're the same people banning players for sniping.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like it I'm sure it feels cheap for the gamers that are getting banned. Would you agree?
You spend that much money you dump that much money into the mode. It's you're supporting 2K in a way that most of us don't. I mean, I've spent money on VC before to upgrade my player quickly. I think a couple of times I did it for my team as well. I don't think in any one year I've ever spent any more than the cost of the game. So what, 50 to 70 Australian dollars. And I don't feel great about that because I don't want to support that. But that's the thing. That's a little bit of pocket change. That's a few beers out of the pub. You know, 50 somewhere between $30, maybe up to 50, 70, whatever, over the course of a year. And they're dumping 3,000, 4,000 US into the game. It's insane. And then to get banned on top of that is definitely a kick in the teeth.
And that's the way I'm looking at it too, like a kick in the teeth. Like, are you kidding me? How much money I've put into this game and that's how you're going to treat me? That's how people are taking that. I guarantee it. Especially based on the comments. In fact, what the screenshot that I shared of you was of those comments, of them saying, are you kidding me? I put this much money into the game. And what they did was they would show the ban screen below the testimonial of, you know, I got hosed and I put this much money in the game. But, you know, the thing is that I said on a past show, I said, you know, some people spend $100 on the game. That's crazy. And I said, you know, it's, you know, and then they spend more on microtransactions and whatnot. I didn't know. I have to be honest with you. I didn't know people were putting that much money into a game. It's absurd.
Madden, also obviously a huge business. And again, like 2K has a virtual monopoly at the moment. Of course, NFL 2K of some kind is coming back now. That's the other big news of that over the past week. But I have heard through sources, through the grapevine, that there are people that spend up to $20,000 on Madden Ultimate Team.
Think about that. That's a car.
Yeah.
That's more than a car. And that's like a down payment on a house. That's insane. Yeah. And you know, the thing is that this is where it can kind of get frustrating, is, you know, that these companies are making a lot of money off of these, you know, the extra money on top of the game.
Yeah.
They're making a lot.
It's what it's all about these days.
Yeah, exactly. And you know they're doing it. And then when they come up short with a release or with a mode or with certain gameplay mechanics, and they keep asking for more and more, or EA starts, like, say, you know, not releasing games, you know, for the NBA series and, like, canceling games and stuff. It's like, how much money do we need to feed into your company?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
It's the other thing is, servers get shut down in 2K every 27 months. So if you spend all that money on cards for my team, and Jack Bill said this, so I'm borrowing his terminology here, I mentioned it on a video talking about this, but you are essentially renting those cards for a couple of years. And once those servers go down, you spent all that money for something that you can't play again. It would be one thing if you spent $4,000 on a rare game that you could just play to your heart's content as long as you've got a system that can play it and the game in your possession, but you're spending it on content that disappears after 27 months. That's
you know, you think about it too. It's almost like an addiction.
It is, and that's like, you know, Jim Sterling.
Scary.
Jim Sterling is pointing this out as well. You know, it seems we have to mention Jim every week on the show because he says all these important things. You know, we're both fans of his work. But it does very much prey on that addiction, and people who are willing to spend that much money and how much income they've got, how much disposable income they have to do this. Of course, some people don't, and there are people that go into debt over these games, and again, for something they can only play for 2 years.
Yeah, and I remember that episode. He did an entire – this was – I think it was for when 2K18 was released. He did this entire, like, hour YouTube video. Jim Sterling did, and he was talking about the gambling mechanics in the game and how it gets people addicted and how it's designed that way.
Absolutely.
In order to get people addicted and to want to keep spending more and whatnot. And it's really disheartening.
Insidious.
It is. And the problem is that there's no coming out and talking about it, right?
No.
So they can get, you know, bludgeoned to death with complaints. And you see it, you know, via user reviews and whatnot. And it's just business as usual. There's no, you know, apology. Of course, why would they apologize, right?
Yeah.
They're making bank. So, and you know what? I know that somebody might listen to this show and be like, oh, well, this is negative. You know, why are you negative? Do you realize how crazy it is that people are spending that kind of money on a video game? Do you realize that a lot of these people feel like they have to?
Yeah.
And that the mechanics in the, they're forced to. And their game in their the mechanics in the game are designed to have that give people that emotional response. And so it is absolutely worth I'm sorry, but ranting about, because as we just talked about, $3,000 to $4,000. I know that's not the norm. Like, these aren't like, that's not the the commonality. That's not like the most common.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there are people out there spending crazy amounts of money on top of the price of the actual game.
And if I can just make a pitch to those people that are spending that money, well, first of all, it's probably best that you don't. I mean, I know obviously if you're getting enjoyment out of the game, if you can afford it, that's your business. But do consider that it is the content is gone after 27 months. That is just the way it is. You know, you're also you know, assuming you don't move on after 12 months, as a lot of people do. But if you are willing to throw that money away, you can use the donation link on the NLSC to send me that money to keep the NLSC up and running for years to come, because it will be up for years to come. So if you want to throw your money away, I'll gladly take some of that money. You know, I'm just going to make that pitch right now, D.
Right, but you also might get addicted to the NLSC.
That's true. But I tell you what, if somebody wanted to donate $20,000 to me, like that person spent on Madden, I will happily buy them the game for the next, you know, however many years for doing that. You know, I will happily give you some perks, some Patreon perks for that, if you're willing to give me that much money. But, hey, give it to a corporation, why not? But anyway, it's crazy. And as you say, and as Jim has pointed out, the mechanics are designed to push you in the direction of microtransactions, to getting that emotional response, that dopamine rush, the flashing lights, and the way the card packs rip open and everything like that. It's all very intentional. It's the same principles that are used with gaming machines, with, you know, your old one-arm bandit and everything in casinos and pubs and whatnot. So it's definitely by design. And even just over this past weekend, I fired up my career to do the daily spin to see what kind of prize I would get some free VC sometimes. But and I noticed that there was an ad for my team in the in my career. I don't know if you saw my tweet about this, but it's actually now that 24 or 48 hour promo pops up, and it is the first option before play your next game in my career. It's, hey, take advantage of this deal for 15,000 VC and a couple of packs and other things for my team, advertising that mode in a different mode for $7.55 Australian, whatever. Probably only about 4 or 5 US. Yeah, so that's how much they're pushing it. And it also goes back to recent comments by Strauss Zelnick, the 2K CEO, that the recurrent revenue has not setting records this year for 2K. It's a bit below projections, apparently, or they were expecting record-setting numbers along with the engagement and sales and everything, and installations, which we talked about before. So that hasn't happened. So they're obviously trying to push that a little bit more and really do that. And that's what gaming has become. And it's a shame to see.
Well, 8 million downloads is just not enough.
No.
That's not enough. You know, you're talking about the whole advertising for my team in a different mode. It reminds me, this goes back actually, I think it's to 2K16, when they were advertising park events in offline gameplay. So, like not offline game, like I'm online on Steam, but it would be like if I went into play now, or I was playing in my league, I can't remember what the event was, but a pop-up would come up on the bottom of the screen even during gameplay for a park event.
Yeah.
Because they want to push you to those online modes. So this is, I mean, as you know, this is nothing new with them advertising in other areas for a certain, you know, for a mode, for an online mode or whatever. But I just think it's all predatory, predatorial.
Absolutely.
I think it's predatory behavior. And the problem is, and we've talked about this on the last episode and so many episodes before, what other basketball game are kids going to play?
Exactly, yeah.
And what's cool?
So they've really got a silver barrel in that in that situation, unfortunately, and it is a shame. And people will say, well, yes, it's happened before, and it has. But the fact it continues happening, the fact that it is a trend that continues to be more aggressive over the years, that's what I made a post in the forum about this. You can check it out in the NBA 2K20 section of the NLSC forum. Even if you're not playing those modes, you have to be concerned for your fellow gamer. I think we need to stand together on this because, again, the company's not going to look out for us. We need to look out for each other. but it's also how that's going to infiltrate other modes. Will VC start ending up being in my league, for example? Will they push their luck with that? Will there be some change that affects the rest of the game, even if it is focusing exclusively on these recurrent revenue mechanics, to the detriment of other parts of the game? So I think this should concern everyone.
Oh, yeah. Do people really think it's going to let up at this point?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if anything, it's been ramping up over the years, starting mostly with 2K18. 2K18 was the start of a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah,
was. I think.
That's its legacy. That's what I said way back Wednesday. That is the legacy of 2K18.
Yeah, and no, I like that article because it spoke a lot to a lot of the issues that I had with the game. And I do think that, and we talked about this before, there's a lot of people who are now admitting that 2K18 was a huge flop.
Yeah,
and probably there's a lot of people trying to defend it. Yeah, there's a lot of people trying to defend it during the game cycle. And saying, oh, it's not that bad, or literally saying, this game is great, this is better than, you know, the games before. But now you see those same people coming out of the woodwork and being like, well...
kind of sucked.
Yeah, 2K18 was probably their worst release on this gen. They're saying, and some have even gone as far as to say that it's the worst 2K ever made. So it is nice to see people talking about it. It doesn't make me feel, you know, much better, because I just couldn't stand the title.
That was a very satisfying way back Wednesday to write, actually, the legacy of 2K18. Interesting to talk about, and it could be a pivotal point in the series, because, as you say, a lot of problems did start with 2K18. As far as the banning goes, before we move on to other topics, as you pointed out, and as people have pointed out on Twitter, it is, you know, again, a kick in the teeth to be banned after spending so much money on the mode. And the whole idea of sniping is—it feels like the auction. I mean, that's what the auction house is made for—to get cards at a good price. And if you can flip those cards for more, and get the MT, then really that's kind of the point of an auction house of that kind of platform in the game. But obviously, if you're doing that, you're not spending money to get cards, and so it's. Very loosely, supposedly against the terms of service, what counts as sniping, how often you can do it, the exact circumstances, that isn't clear. Once again, 2K in their communication, that is not a good, that is not their strong suit, communication. And this is something they really do need to communicate, especially if they are banning people who are spending so much money on the mode. What exactly they consider sniping, what they consider unacceptable sniping, because... certainly if you get a card at a low price and if you just happen to be lucky and they say, oh, you're sniping, and you could just be somebody who's gone into the auction house for the first time and gotten lucky with a really good price, and yet you've been banned. Obviously, a lot of people who are banned are making a habit of it. But again, it's not really explicitly laid out in the terms of service exactly what's wrong, what it is, why they consider it wrong. Well, we know why they consider it wrong, because it's not getting people to spend money. But that lack of communication, I think, is... Yeah, you can't be banning people that are buying your product and spending that much money on the recurrent revenue mechanics, on those microtransactions, to get those VC sales, to ban them for seemingly no reason and saying, oh, you were sniping, tough luck, that's against the terms of service. You need to at least elaborate on that.
Well, like you alluded to, though, it's money that's not hitting their bottom line. It doesn't need to be specifically laid out in the terms of service for them to do something about it. And the thing is that what are people going to do? They're going to go on social media and complain. And what is that going to do? They're already on social media complaining. That's what people are doing. Like, 2K can get away with this because what are people going to do? What are the banned people going to do? Are they going to are they going to take it to court?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Unlikely.
Are they going to, like, have them served? Like, there's absolutely no. So, and 2K knows that. And their popularity will rise above all, still at this point, even though they've had, you know, a couple years of turbulence and whatnot in that regard. But, yeah, I think it's nuts. And, like, the thing is that if it's not hitting their bottom line, or there's something that's threatening their bottom line, they're going to do something about it. And they've proven that time and time again. And for people doing that, they feel that, you know, is a threat. And that takes like I said, it takes money off of the bottom line.
The funny thing is, if they show the goodwill, because they've also stopped the spotlight challenges because they realized people were getting good cards for basically just playing the game. Imagine that. So they're doing this stuff and they're pulling back on this goodwill because they realize they're not going to hit those recurrent revenue targets. And it seems to me, and look, I'm no business major, I'm no you know, guru with this thing, but it occurs to me that if you give people value for money, if you give them goodwill and a reason to support your company and something that they'll want to spend money on, not forced to, but want to, you'll probably hit those targets because people say, you know what, I will spend that money. And I'll have to admit here, if I could spend 10 extra dollars every year and always get a Jordan and Pippen in my team, and just spend that extra $10, I probably would. I hate to admit that, I hate to say that, to admit that I would consider paying above and beyond. But if you could say, if you said, okay, if you order the special edition for $20 extra, $10 or $20 extra, and you can pick any five cards you want and you get them straight away, I'll pay that money. And if you give people bang for their buck, you'll get their bucks.
And what other duo would you want other than Jordan and Pippen?
Probably.
I agree. So I think the thing is that you, and we've seen it when they do things right, you know, how people react favorably. I think goodwill does go a long way. And I think that, big picture wise, it makes people more loyal to the brand. And I think it makes them want to stay on the game longer and get, they'll be less frustrated. But in order for 2K to change their ways, what needs to happen? Either another competitor needs to come into the space and do it the right way and start taking some of that market share in order for them to smarten up. Or people just need to stop buying the game.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you really think about it, those are the only two ways where 2K is either going to lighten up or, you know, improve the way they're doing things, is if people either stop buying the game, which is not going to happen, or another competitor, a worthy competitor, comes into the play, into the space, and is more fair to the gamer. Unfortunately, I am very worried that for the next couple of years, we're only going to have 2K, so they're going to keep getting away with it.
The third possibility, which also doesn't seem that likely the way things are going, is that the bubble bursts either by people simply getting sick of it. They may buy the game and refuse to play along with 2K's aggressive push for recurrent revenue. Or if there's more regulations, we've seen, obviously, I think Belgium has won and some other European countries have put in legislation against loot boxes in video games, where in those countries you can't buy the VC in 2K. Funnily enough, 2K was trying to get people to petition the government to change that. Good luck with that one, 2K. Unless there's some kind of regulation or law enacted against gambling mechanics in video games, and in the US as well, and in North America, US and Canada, the primary target markets and the biggest part where the demographic is located, it's probably not going to do anything. And somebody's pointed this out, but one of the boards that oversees things like that, Strasselnik, the 2K CEO, is on that board. So it really doesn't seem like that's going to change. So either the bubble is going to have to burst from, you know, we're going to have to burst the bubble as gamers, or again, as you say, a competitor is going to have to come in and make it and shake things up and make a difference.
Well, I think one of the things that's concerning, I think you would agree, is that we're not dealing with adults here all the time.
Yeah.
We're not, yeah. This is, you know, we're dealing with kids. And we're dealing with kids who also a lot of times have to bug their parents for money possibly and whatnot. And it's a lot, this isn't like FanDuel or DraftKings, which by the way is still pretty toxic and addicting and can be an issue in itself. But those are basically legal, I think, in every state now in the US or something like that. There's only a couple states where FanDuel and DraftKings are not legal. But you know, people can gamble away all their money all day if they want on those applications. But those are adults, right? As far as I know, you can only have accounts on FanDuel and DraftKings if you're an adult. But we're talking about kids that are being taken advantage of, and I think that is my biggest problem with it. I mean, it's bad as it is, but we're talking about teenagers. I even think sometimes younger. Having this predatory behavior affect them and the gambling mechanics. And it's just not healthy. And it's scary. So
I think 2K also somehow flies under the radar or escapes notice because it is a sports game. As mainstream as it is, as big as it is in pop culture, compared to other genres, people don't seem to get as outraged over sports games because they are, again, as big as they are still kind of niche to a certain extent compared to other genres. So when you see the Kotaku articles or Polygon or whatever going after these controversies like some of the EA Battlefront and whatever, those get the attention, but sports games don't. It's almost seen like, oh, that's just the way sports games work. So you don't get that same outrage, and you look at something like the kids who've been able to rack up huge mobile phone bills back in the day, cell phone bills, with subscription content and things like that, when that was a big thing, when you had to subscribe to get ringtones, and how quaint that seems these days. But that kind of thing, or bad plans that weren't very clear, and the kids ended up texting a lot or making a lot of calls and just racking up these thousands of dollars, and of course then the parents get stuck with the bill. I think the same thing is happening with 2K, I'm sure it is, but it just goes under the radar compared to those other issues, and it's I guess we have to keep speaking up about it, but it really has to gain traction, I think, with mainstream gaming journalism, or even mainstream, you know, there has to be some kind of light shone upon it, that it's not just, oh, those nerdy jocks, what a weird thing to say, but the people who love sports games, that niche audience, it's just them and whatever issues they have, and it's hard to get so many people to care about it, or enough people to care to affect change.
How could I forget ringback tones? You know, the only ringback tone that I actually ever really used was Nelly Air Force Ones.
Okay.
I think it was like the year 2001 or two or right around there. And I used that as like, so if you called me, you'd hear Air Force Ones. Looking back on it, that was pretty stupid.
I was going to say, you're not going to tell me you've got the crazy frog, are you? Or
no. No, but on your original point, you know, it's funny. We talked about this on another podcast. Not only do reviewers not cover it, and not only does it and it doesn't get the necessary light shined on it. Like you had stated prior, they're trying to make that not reviewable, not part of a video game review. And that's scary. Because that's a huge part of the game. And those are the modes that they push people to the most. And so not only, like you said, do they not shine enough of a light on it now, but they're trying to make that a thing where it's not even part of a game's review.
Not even part of the conversation, when it absolutely should be.
Yeah, it is. And like I said, modes they put, even if it wasn't the modes they pushed people to the most, it's still a part of the video game. And it's a video game review. You review the game as a whole. But the biggest thing with game reviews, and you know this because I think we still probably do it. I know I did it a lot in the past. But a lot of people read reviews in order to decide if they want to buy the game.
Yep.
And that's the purpose of a lot of reviews, is to, you know, shine light on the game, give people the big picture about the game in order for them to make a healthy decision.
Right.
And if you're
theoretically,
theoretically, you know, and the thing is if you're leaving out that information, which is such a big part of the online mode landscape, then you're deceiving.
Yeah. No two ways about it.
Yeah. So anyway, Air Force Ones, Nelly, that was my ring back to.
Because these days you can just hook up a phone to the PC and copy over some MP3s, which is much easier and cheaper, much easier on the wallet. You can also just play My Team and not pay for cards. They are obviously trying to make it a little bit tougher. The situation with new cards coming through, there's a Ben Simmons now that you can upgrade to The latest Galaxy Opal Ben Simmons you can upgrade to a better 3-point shooter than Steph Curry.
So I saw that. So they basically what they did is they gave him the range extender badge.
Yep.
I saw that on Twitter, and I thought of our conversation last week about this, and I'm just going to tell you something. Turning a simulation basketball game into a ridiculous arcade experience is just not a good idea. So I think it's ridiculous. Ben Simmons having a range extender badge is like, let's see here, like giving Tim Legler Vince Carter's dunk package.
Yeah, like giving Shaq. You took about LSU giving Shaq range extender. You might as well at that point.
Hey, exactly. Yeah, because Ben Simmons is not a 3-point shooter at all.
I think they've made a similar amount of threes in their career to date, one or two. So we talked about that last week. You can go back and listen to that discussion in 313. It defeats the purpose of the mode in so many ways, but suits the purposes of recurrent revenue, I suppose, because it creates artificial demand for a card that really doesn't represent basketball, realistically. But that is the way. As always, I encourage people to avoid spending that money. I mean, people are going to do that. If you've got the disposable income to do it, well, that's your choice to make. The problem is a lot of people don't have They don't have the disposable income to support recurrent revenue mechanics and still do, and it is a shame. Jim Sterling, again, has done some excellent work exposing that and exposing the whole philosophies behind it and the design concepts that are meant to do it, and it's just predatory, as we've said, and it's a shame that while they're doing something really cool with the daily simulations and showing people that and getting that engagement up, they're also doing something very shady behind the scenes with my team. It's giving with one hand and taking with the other.
Yeah, for those listening, speak up if you have an issue with it. Like I said, I'm not expecting anybody to draw up court papers or have them served or sue or anything like that, because nobody wants to go through that. But I think you have a right to have your voice heard.
Yeah.
And I think whether that's on Twitter, the NLSC, Operation Sports, Reddit. Yeah. For some reason, that's a lot of companies like to go to Reddit, EA Sports, one of them. Mm-hmm. I hate Reddit. I'm not a fan of it. I don't like the format. I don't like the upvoting, whole thing, almost like a popularity contest.
Hive mind. There's definitely a lot of confirmation bias that can happen.
Yeah, exactly. And I have that problem also with Operation Sports, because they have this, you can like people's posts, and it allows people to get bullied up on
Have asked me about that, with implementing that in the forum, because I believe it's an add-on that I could put on there. But yeah, it's one of those things that it does, like you say, it's kind of like a Twitter ratio sometimes it offers that interaction, but again, it also invites bullying, as you say.
Yeah, and you don't want people to feel like their point is less valid just because they had less likes.
Yeah,
and whatnot. But yeah, back to my original point for those who are listening is, get on those social media platforms, tweet at the powers that be. Baluba, he's Mike Wang. Tweet at him and say, this is how I feel about it. And don't go in hot. Another thing we talked about before the show, don't go in hot, yelling and screaming, because that's just not the way to do it. Go in go in rationally and explain yourself and explain the problems that you have with it. But please make your voice heard, because you deserve it. So
definitely. And if we don't speak out, then we can't, if we're just going to grumble to ourselves, then we can't really complain when change is not affected. I mean, there's no guarantees, but it doesn't really hurt us to speak out and to stand up for each other, stand up for ourselves and trying to affect a positive change. But, I'm sure that's not going to change anytime soon. Unfortunately, it is the way of gaming. But hey, if that bubble bursts, Derek, I'm not going to shed any tears for the companies if it does.
I would love to see it. I would love to see it happen. I'd love to see the scramble. I'd like to see what action they take. I'd like to see if somebody comes in and says, hey, you know what? This is really our opportunity, even though you and I both know they've had an opportunity over the last few years.
Door's open.
But yeah, the door's still open. But yeah, I would. I'd like to see something happen that makes them question what they're doing, because I don't think they're questioning it at all right now.
Not at all. And of course, we will come back to the topic of the annual grind, because that is a big thing with my career and my team, having to start over every year. And again, that comes back to recurrent revenue as well. That's something we teased last week. Another topic we teased, and again, it also ties in with a dissatisfaction with the current product, if you feel that way, is unfinished business on the virtual hardwood, is the little catchy little title tentatively we're going with. Might in fact be the title I give for the podcast when it goes live. We shall see. You'll know by now because you'll be listening to it. But if you do feel unhappy with the current games, ideally you can go back to an old one. And it's sometimes, I mean, you can't dust off my team in 2K16, for example, because the servers are shut down. But if there is something in the mode, in the game that you like, you can go back and play it. And we mentioned this last week, and we thought it was such a great topic that we wanted to revisit it, because it is perpetually an issue with games coming out every single year. It's difficult to do everything you want in the space of a year. So there's always some level of unfinished business. And even back in the day, you wouldn't always finish a season of in basketball games. You might, especially if you don't simulate. So a lot of games, I feel, and I'm sure you do as well, that there's a lot of unfinished business, basically, that you can go back. It's really fun to go back and, as you, I think you said it last week, to finish a season in NBA Live 10 or something like that, or continue a dynasty, or play a mode you never have before, assuming, of course, that it's not online, the servers. You don't need servers around to do it. It's something you can do if you do want to go back to an old game, that you can dust it off and, yeah, get some closure.
I think the biggest problem with doing that is, like you had alluded to, time. Time is really tough. And when I play, I'm not playing against the computer. So going back and playing another game is also having two people trying to find the time. So it's me and my brother, or me and both my brothers. So sometimes three people if we're playing on the same team. So that makes it tough. The other thing that makes it tough is, we always want to play 82 games, and we always want to play 12-minute quarters. So, yeah, finding time to play, to go back and play, and even with a current game, but go back to an old game and either finish a season or start a new season on an old favorite and play. Each game takes like an hour and a half, or hour and 15 minutes to an hour and a half. That is really tough to do.
It is.
And we do go back. My brother and I were just playing. We played a game of 2K7 the other day. And then I played a game of Live 10 against him as well. But for us to basically find a way to dedicate the time to not only continue our 2K20 season that we're playing right now, which I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, but go back and continue seasons on other games, it's brutal to find that time. It's almost impossible.
And I can definitely relate to that, because, and this is perhaps a topic we may cover it now, we'll see how we go as far as going down the rabbit hole with it. But as you say, if you like to play all 82 games and you want to play every game, you know, you mentioned, you know, feeling the frustration of accidentally simulating, and I've been there too, and then you're too far into the season to start again, so it's very annoying. But if you want to do that and want to play the 12 minutes, as you say, at least an hour and a half out of your time, you're playing with rules, so of course there's going to be stoppages, loading times, everything else. So it is very time consuming to do, and that is why we are left with unfinished seasons and career modes and things like that, or modes that we've never played, because if you do play the game in that way, it just takes so long. And of course, you may still really enjoy your time with the game, because there are games that I have not finished seasons in that I still consider my favorites, because I've had many great memories with them. And to go back to the point that you brought up on a very early show about making memories and positive memories with basketball games, which is absolutely what you have to do. It's funny that we can do that, though, without finishing it, especially when you consider that, as gamers, that is usually the point of video games. But then again, we also come from a generation of very tough platform games and things on Nintendo and whatnot that maybe a lot of people didn't finish.
Yeah, and I want to make a point, too, about finishing. I think basketball games and sports games are a little different in that regard. And the biggest reason is because you don't have to finish a season to feel like you won something, right? You can play a play now game, and you play an entire game, and you can create memories that has an end result in that one game. There's a game that my brother Mark and I played. We were all three playing a season on NBA 2K14 for the PC. And I was using the 96-97 Rockets, and he was using the 64-65 Celtics. We were doing like a best teams, all-time teams. My league, I think it's called Association on that game. But we never finished that season. I think we only got like 10 games in, all of us. But we had the most unbelievable triple overtime thriller with me using Drexler, going back and forth with him using Sam Jones. And some of the shots that were made in that game, it was just unbelievable. And we still talk about that game today. And that's one game. We didn't need to finish a season to have that memory. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That game was finished. There's an end result. We still talk about it as it's legendary to us. And I think that's the biggest difference about sports game as opposed to a game like Castlevania or a game like Contra or Mario.
That is true because, again, there's no exhibition modes in platform games, so there's no self-contained experience. That's a great point that I hadn't really thought of. You know, we think of that culmination of the season, getting through, winning that virtual championship, seeing the celebration video or animations, depending on what year it is, what game it is. So there's obviously that goal there, and I've had a lot of fun doing that, playing through an entire season in a year and playing through multiple seasons on a couple of occasions. But you definitely can get that that sense of closure, that sense of enjoyment. And I know there's been times where I haven't finished my career season, but I've been able to use that player for online and play with the guys. Played 500 games personally and over 500 as a team of Pro-Am in NBA 2K17. And even though I stopped part of the way through the second season of the my career mode, still felt incredible amount of enjoyment and closure out of what I did manage to get through and didn't get to the Hall of Fame, didn't do that until 2K19. And that was also felt like a lot of closure. So it is fun to aim for those goals, but to have that memory and that game that sticks in your mind like that, I'm envious. You know, I've got games of my own like that, but you know, I'd love to see. You know, obviously, I'm guessing you don't have footage of it, but it's a shame because how fun would that be to be able to watch that as well as reminisce and to put that out there so that we can all enjoy it.
So I don't know if you noticed, like on my YouTube channel, I've been, you know, uploading videos for a few years now.
Yeah.
And my brother and I will sit there on the couch and boot up my YouTube channel on our TV in the living room. And we'll go back and watch our games against each other on 2K17.
Yep.
A lot of and so one of my biggest things over the last few years is I use Action Video Recorder. And I take highlights of every single game we play. And a lot of times I upload videos. And so that's my YouTube channel has been almost like my storage space for our memories.
That's cool.
A lot. So like I wish I had that game I told you about, the Sam Jones one.
Yeah.
Against Clyde Drexler. I would have died to have that on video. I would love to go back and watch that. You know, another example of like unfinished business that we kind of wish we could go back to, but we were able to create memories without finishing a season, was we had a season on NBA 2K11. And we, back then, it wasn't for the PC, so what we did was we drafted with the, you know, the current NBA teams, and Alonzo G was in that game, and he is a monster in that game. Alonzo G is basically Michael Jordan in NBA 2K11. And
should have been the Gee Challenge. Instead of
the Alonzo G. I say G. I don't know if it's Alonzo G, but I think it's Alonzo G.
Now I want to make a mod, the G Challenge.
The G Challenge, and basically you can
inflate his ratings, so he's just like Jordan level ready.
Yeah,
just...
he's like 98 overall.
Yeah,
but he dunked on everything. And he is such a legend because of his performances on NBA 2K11. Yeah, sometimes I wish we could go back and play the season because, yes, it's unfinished. But I got to tell you, we didn't finish any seasons on 2K11, but there were so many legends made out of that game. And like I said, one of them was Alonzo G. But yeah, you know, the funny thing is about sports games is when you're in the moment, you're not thinking about that you're playing in a season. Like, I don't think, you know, when you're playing in a game, I don't think, like, we were playing our Thunder game, again, Pelicans versus Thunder tonight. Not at one point during that game did I think about, like, I'm playing in a season. My mind is in that game, that one game, and trying to win that one game. And I think that's just what's great about sports is, you know, you can really get immersed in one game and you can shut everything else out and you can like literally live in that moment and that can be your memory.
I think that's true. You've got the overall context of the season and that ultimate goal if you want to play towards it, and it's a scenario that it's provided you with. But just the schedule, if nothing else, having those games, string games one after another, you can see stats keeping, record keeping and things like that. But that self-contained experience, and it's true, you don't get that from other genres, really. You can play a little bit of a... You can play your favorite world, I suppose. You can go back to Super Mario Bros. 3 or Bart vs. the Space Mutants, why not? You can play your favorite levels and things like that. But really, the ultimate goal is to get through the levels and to beat the boss. If you haven't done that, you haven't really finished... Well, you haven't finished the game. There is the end point in basketball games, but yeah, you certainly... Playing one great game, if you can play a series of those over the course of a year, even if you don't finish a season, I suppose there is that there's that satisfaction. Absolutely, I can relate to that, and you know, absolutely. But at the same time, I still look back with some regrets at seasons that I didn't finish. When I was doing the 20th anniversary of live content, and I will rerun this article, I went back and recreated and finished my franchise with the Kings in 2002 because I was so close to finishing the regular season, but it was the last year of high school, so things were getting in the way. And then NBA Live 2003 came out, so I never really finished the season. And then I lost the save file, and losing the save file, knowing that you can't go back and finish business if you want to, I think that's perhaps where the regrets come in. When you have the save file, you know that it's there. If you feel like it, you can go back to it. But knowing that that's gone, you can't finish that business unless you recreate it to some extent, as I did, and that's what stings as a gamer. And thinking, why did I delete that save, or if the save gets corrupted or something, it's kind of heartbreaking from a gaming standpoint.
Yeah, at the end of last year, my brother and I tried to go back and finish our two. So on 2K14 for the PC, we finished two different seasons, but we didn't play the playoffs in either one. I know that sounds crazy, but
any reason for that, or yeah, just
stats,
right?
So regular, well, this goes way back. So my brother and I can quote individual player stats. Like, you can name a player and we can like quote their bests. Like, we're really like, and it's all regular season stats. Right. So a lot of what the season is playing the season. And this is, like you said, you know, the context of a whole season. We have all those memories from an individual game, but we love seeing the way the stats look at the end of the season, like what we were able to do and who averaged what and all of that stuff. So when you're in the playoffs, we don't look at it that way. We don't look at the stats the same way in the playoffs as we do during the season. So once we finished our first season on NBA 2K14, I was using the 07-08 Celtics, Nuggets, 06-07 Nuggets, and he was using the 07-08 Celtics. We decided to start a second season and go through that, as crazy as that sounds. And I was using the 07-08 Nuggets, and he was using the 07-08 Celtics. But anyway, we decided, we were like, you know what? This feels empty. We should go back and try to finish those two seasons. And the files are gone. We don't know where they are.
Oof, that is rough.
Because you know the way 2K14 works, there's save location with all the files in them. And what happened was, is we got a new computer at some point. I got a new computer at some point, and I transferred the files over, but apparently those two didn't make it, the two save files. And we were devastated.
Mm.
Because
absolutely,
the amount of time it takes to play two 82-game seasons against each other with two different teams, that's over 300 games. That's 82 games for me, 82 games for him, and then another 82 games for me, and another 82 games for him.
Yeah.
All against each other. So if you think about it, how many hours is that? Just playing games, over 400, probably.
Easily
over that. So when you want to talk about heartbreaking, that was probably it. And so that speaks perfectly to unfinished business. We really wanted to go back and play those playoffs. And, well, we can't. So
you mentioned looking at the stats at the end of the season and as the season is progressing, and I certainly love it too, and it probably sounds funny to people who know that you and I are not all about stats but also about the on-court experience, virtual or otherwise. But one thing I love doing, especially once NBA Live got the injury situation sorted out and we had sliders and everything, was to look at the stats at the end of the season and see that not everyone had played 82 games, because that felt realistic. Because back in the day, before the injuries, the game-to-game injuries happened, unless you were actually implementing that yourself, you basically, you know, you'd have 82 games for everyone who played, or maybe some of the bench warmers wouldn't play if you didn't have garbage time, but all your stars would play 82 games, and that's so very rare to see more than a couple of players, especially these days with load management. But even back in the day with injuries and whatnot, to see the entire starting lineup play all 82 games, or even to see the same starting lineup start all 82 games, or every, you know, that consistently, just doesn't happen, because lineups do change and injuries do happen during the season. So to see that reflected in the game, and it also underscored the challenges that you faced at the times during the season as well. So I think I can totally relate to that, as looking back at the stats and seeing, you know, that, oh, and this player missed a few games. I remember that stretch and how tough that was. And when I changed up the lineup and when he started, and when Eric Pytkowski won me the game once, so I gave him the start in the next game. The little things like that are what make franchise mode so fantastic, and one of the reasons I do miss it, having played my career, you know, having that control and being able to do those little things just like the real life, just like the real NBA, is really special.
See, I love this because you and I, this is everything. And I just want to make a point. You play my league 100% different than my brother, but we both make memories.
Yeah.
And our my league experience, when we do it, when we're even when we're drafting teams, we like to do full strength, and sure, we want to see teams will do against each other full strength. And I think this is great, because your experience with my league is more, you know what, we're going to make this season as realistic as possible. We're going to keep injuries are going to be on. You know, I want to see how I do with this, you know, during the stretch when this player is out. But my brother and I turn injuries off. And I know that sounds crazy, but we're using classic teams on most of our seasons. And even if you're drafting, we're doing this. But we want to see what these teams would do for 82 games all intact. We keep things like team chemistry on. We keep things like progressive fatigue on. So, like, if they're playing a back-to-back, they're more tired in the next game and whatnot. But we don't have injuries on. And I just think it's cool that, you know, you and I can both have the experience that we want. And
yeah,
we can play, though, the mode entirely different. And I think that's pretty cool.
And I think your way does make a lot of sense if you are doing it that way as well. If you do have the classic teams and from different eras, there's a certain amount of realism that's already gone out the window conceptually, which is fine. Which, you know, I think that's a really cool way to play. I've always preferred to play, you know, current rosters, current season. How would it work if I was in charge of the team? Which is a very appealing idea when you're a Bulls fan sometimes, I have to tell you. So there are two different ways to play, more than two different ways to play, obviously, but there's two very specific ways that we play, and yours does make sense from that standpoint. And again, yeah, as you say, either way, to look back at the end of the season and see what you've accomplished. And it's, I think, as long as you've got that feeling of accomplishment and fun and memories and everything, you know, it's been worth your while. As long as you feel you've got your value, you know, the value for your dollar, your value for money that you've from buying the game, that you've spent enough time with it. Because there probably has been some games that that I've not spent enough time with, and I've been thinking about this for a Friday Five at least, you know, five games I wish I spent more time with, and I'm trying to narrow it down to a list of five that I would really be at the top of my list. Have there been games like that for you where you've perhaps not played enough of a game, or there's a certain game in the series that you've maybe revisited later and thought, oh, I wish I spent more time with that because this is actually better than I remember, or there was something that I didn't do in this game, for example?
No, absolutely. And right before I touched on that, I wanted to get to a point that, you know, you had talked about doing a season with now teams. So like me and my brother are about 20 games in to our 2K20 season, with me using the Pelicans and him using the Rockets. We don't have injuries on. And the reason why we think this is cool, it's just a different way to play, is what would it have been like if Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and the Nets were fully healthy all season?
Oh, for 82 sure. games? Yeah.
You know, what would these teams be like if they were at full strength all season? So I think that just whether you're using now teams or, you know what, basically, and you'll agree with this, people play how you want. They basically make your memories that way. I think as far as games, like you had mentioned, like that I wish I had played more, there's a couple. 2K10, during that game cycle, I wish I had spent more time with it. I revisited it, but that's a tongue twister, a couple years ago, and I started uploading a few videos to my YouTube as well. But that game was really solid, and I wish I had spent more time playing it with my brothers and whatnot. I think the other games that I wish I had spent more time with, even though I wasn't really much of a fan of them, was probably Live 06 and Live 08. I wasn't a huge fan of those two games, but I didn't spend a lot of time with them when they were first released because I was pretty turned off immediately. But I wish I had given them more of a chance because I revisited them a little bit later and I can see some good qualities in them.
The Live 06 PC is definitely worth revisiting, and I'll see if I can make it even more worth the while if we can get some mods together for this, not just in March Madness, but which is ongoing, but also throughout the rest of the year with our 25th anniversary of NBA Live. No, I think for me, Live 10, probably because at the time I was still playing Live 06 on PC with updated rosters. I just, for some reason, wasn't really feeling 10 as much. And I wish I'd spent more time with it now. I wish I'd spent some more time with Adidas Live Run and some of those things, if only to write about them now for articles, to have more of an insight and nostalgic memories of them. I think Live 09 as well. 09 and 10, I think I didn't spend as much time with it. I think I was feeling a little bit maybe jaded by the fact they weren't on PC. Probably didn't help. 2K11 and 2K12, one of the great things about going back and doing this mod, the rosters for 2K11 and some other ideas I've got that I love to do, is that I'm spending the time with a classic game that I didn't spend as much time with as I would have liked because, again, playing Live 06 PC, still trying to get into 2K and its isomotion at the time and the different feelings of the game. Seeing that it was a great game but not being able to get that feel because I was so used to the live feel and the live controls. 2K11 and 2K12 are games I missed out on. 2K15 and 16, again, where I actually spent more time with Live those 2 years. I would have liked to spend more time with those. And even last year with 2K19, I've got so many great cards because of the way the auction house was working last year and the way the market crashed on it and made it so easy to get the Galaxy Opals. I wish I'd spent a bit more time playing with that. And, of course, the servers are still up, so I still can, so maybe I will, but I go back and I look back at some of those great games and games that it would have been more interesting to look at. And of course, some of them I can revisit and will. But like we said, it's time. And how much time can you spend on it when you've also wanted to spend time with a 2K20 or a modding 2K11 or time with friends and family or indeed work, you know, things earning the bills to pay for things that like video games and the electricity to run them. But yeah, there are definitely games which I feel I could have spent more time with, and it's why I like to keep a big collection. I know a lot of people like to trade in their games every year, or I don't know if that's still a popular thing, especially with digital releases not being viable, of course. But I like to have that big collection because, obviously, as a content creator, it's worth being able to pull those out. But for my own personal enjoyment, it's fun to revisit those old favorites and also games that perhaps deserve a second look or that I didn't get to spend enough time with.
Well, there's a couple things. One, you know, thinking back, you're talking about, you know, games we wish we played more. The biggest reason why I didn't play Live 06 and Live 08, Live 07 was just terrible. Live 07 is the 2K18 of Live series, in my opinion. Mm. But the reason I didn't play Live 06 and Live 08 is, as you know, our play style is, you know, my brothers and I playing in a season against each other. And they removed the ability to use multiple teams.
2004.
So that was really the reason why those games didn't get a lot of play, but I still wish I had played them a little bit more myself. But as far as the, you know, you're talking about, you know, people getting the game digitally, they're getting it. They're not like, a lot of people aren't getting the box, the, you know, the hard copy. There's something awesome about getting a disc.
There is.
Sorry, but there's something great about the packaging. There's something, you know, I still go back, as silly as it sounds, I still go back and look at some of my older basketball games and, like, look at the back and what they were saying about them and all the screenshots.
It's interesting.
And, you know, we talked about Fox Sports Basketball, NBA, yep. 2000, which you were showing screenshots of. And so I was like, you know what, I got to buy this game again because I had that game when I was younger.
Which version did you get this time around?
I got Fox Sports NBA Basketball 2000 for the PC.
Oh, you got PC, yeah, because it was also on PlayStation, I believe. So,
yeah, I'm gonna get it for the PC and hope it works on Windows 10. It ended up being a little bit more expensive than I wanted because of shipping and handling. But you know what I'm most excited about? Not even putting on the game. I want to get that in my hands. I want to get the box.
Yeah.
I want to look at the front and I want to look at the back and I want to get those feelings of nostalgia looking at it. So there's something still that resonates with me with that, and call me old fashioned or whatever, but I still prefer having something physical in my hand.
There is something special about it. And like you say, being able to look at the box art, being able to look at the points on the back. I don't have the box for my copy of Fox Sports. I just got it in the jewel case when I bought it, but it did come with the manual. And that's very nostalgic to me as well in gaming in general, basketball games and other genres, is a physical manual, not just one you can go to the site and download a PDF, which is handy, don't get me wrong, but an actual manual that you can read through. And I remember not just basketball games, but other things, just poring over those manuals and reading everything and seeing if there were tips in there and just what they had to say about the game. And, of course, this is not a basketball game. It's a strategic adventure game, I guess, but Sid Meier's Pirates had a really thick booklet that just went into the history of piracy, not software piracy, but actual on the high seas piracy and ships and things like that, and had all kinds of detail because that's the kind of detail that went into the game. But just reading about that and some of the history that went into the game in the manuals is so fascinating, and of course basketball games would have all the with their manuals were detailed back in the day as well, and you don't get that anymore. So with that and box art, there's something, like you say, well, digital is nice and it's handy, convenient, whatever, but being able to read a manual and read a big thick manual that's got all this interesting information about the game and stuff like that, and to hold a disc, hold the box in your hands and check that out in the back, we're definitely on the same page with that one, because it was really cool to do that, and it's why I still get physical copies of some games, but yeah, it's something, obviously you can't do it with a 2K anymore. Although, actually, I think they do sell physical copies of Steam Keys, which is kind of a waste, really, because you're still going to download it anyway. But yeah, that's just something I miss.
Yeah, I think it was, I can't remember which game it was. I think it might have been NBA Live 98 that had the awesome manual. It was one of the NBA games in like the mid-90s, and each page had like a basketball on it, like a little basketball. And I think NBA Fast Break 98 had a cool manual as well. There's definitely something awesome about having video game manuals. And like you said, sometimes you'll get like a little extra information on them that you didn't know about the game. But yeah, I agree. And you know what? I get NBA, and I've said this on the prior podcast, I get the physical, the digital version for Steam for 2K20, 2K, 19, 2K18, etc. But I also make it a point to try to go out and get it for the console and get that physical copy. So I always still enjoy, you know, you probably didn't have it. You're aware of Blockbuster.
Yeah, we did actually come here, but we have other, of course, video chains that were here in the day, but Blockbuster did make it here. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, they did. Okay. So you understand. So there was always this amazing feeling of going into Blockbuster Video and just like walking around and looking at all the different movies and games and the different sections and stuff. And I still get that same cool feeling when I go into like GameStop and I'm walking around and I'm looking at all the games and all the boxes and whatnot and the box art and trying to decide if I want to pick up a game or whatever. So there's something still cool about that. And I hope that stays around for a little bit longer. Blockbuster's been gone for a while now. They closed all their stores. But yeah, I there's still something cool about it.
It's, yeah, and of course the collectibles, as a collectible, you know, you can display it on a shelf. It's why I actually got the NBA Live 2002 with Michael Jordan on the cover, in the Wizards jersey. That was such a great pickup for me, under $20 too, on eBay, the Japanese version of Live 2002 with Jordan on the cover, and also the Japanese version of NBA Street, the first Street, with a render of Jordan on the cover, his in-game model, and it just was such a cool collectible to get, and to get these different versions. The only way I can play them is on an emulator. I can't. They won't work on my PAL PS2, but I can pop them in and play them on the emulator and see that. And it's interesting to see the differences in game and to see that some of the menus are half in English and things like that. So it's interesting to see that. Yeah, I mean it's one thing. Obviously, budget is an issue, but I wouldn't mind collecting some alternate editions of like NBA Live 06 and such that have got different covers, just as collectibles, because it's interesting to have. And I mean, any one of them that'll work on my hardware, I can go back and play, but sometimes it is about what you see on the shelf.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't even have bought Fox Sports NBA Basketball 2000 because I forgot about it.
Oh, well, I'm happy to remind you with those screenshots. That Patrick Ewing is amazing, let me tell you. That's
those faces, it's funny. You know, in the modding community, they're like, don't make a face with a smiling face. Like, yeah. Don't create a face with a picture of a player smiling. And Fox Sports Basketball NBA 2000, or however they say it, Fox Sports NBA Basketball 2000, literally, it looks like from those screenshots and from memory, there's like half of the faces are like smiling.
Yeah, it's a perfect demonstration of why you don't do that, because it's during the intros, and you'll see it, and I posted some of the screenshots from during the player intros, they've got some great effects, but then the players run onto the court, and for whatever reason, they're staring up at the camera, up at the screen, like you wouldn't do, they don't do that in real life, they don't look up in the sky at the roof of the stadium as they're running onto the court, but they're looking up at the camera, and some of them, the ones that have got the goofy grins on their faces, I could not stop laughing. I could not stop laughing at that game.
But you gotta think about something. Those might be the best cyber faces ever. Those are the real faces. Those faces are the
some
real faces
some
on players. Some of them, and like the Kobe one.
The Kobe one. The Kobe one's pretty good. The Shaq one. The Shaq one looks like discount LeVar Ball. Patrick Ewing kind of is very unflattering. Live 2000's faces were a lot better. I need to do a comparison. In fact, I might do a comparison actually of games from the 2000 season, because Live 2000's faces are phenomenal.
I love the Live 2. I said that on the past. I said they still hold up. I will go to my grave saying that Live 2000's faces could hold up today. I don't even care.
Incredible.
I think they're really good, and they were so, like I said, they were so good that they were able to put them on the team select screen.
Yep.
And or like the lineup screen, and they looked awesome. Like, I remember looking at Jason Williams and Paul Pierce and whatnot, and I'm like, these are really good. So yeah, I wish I still had that game for PC, because I love Live 2000.
I actually have the NBA Fast Break 98 manual in front of me now. I can take some pictures and send them along later. But looking through it, team selection screen, and they've got all the, they're black and white pictures, black and white photos, but screenshots, but they've got all of all of that, and they're all framed with, like, they're a backboard. They've got the screenshot, and then they've got a little rim and the backboard around it. And it's just so detailed, and just reading through it and reading about the playbooks and everything, it's what you would do, and you'd study that, and you'd get all that information about the game, and it would, in a way, it would hype you up to play almost as much as those old intro videos. There's little things back in the day that made us really jump into games and want to play are quite special.
I love Fast Break 98. I have it for an emulator right now, and because I don't have a PlayStation anymore, but I have it for an emulator right now, and I just threw it on the other night, and it's just so many memories. Yeah. I that game probably influenced me the most out of any game. It was the biggest wow factor, and I still think it's so underappreciated.
I still need to have a look at it with both the PC version, NBA, which is NBA Action 98, which I believe might have also been the Sega version, was also called that as well. We actually have in our download section for that PC version, if you wanted to get your hands on that PC version, because I do believe that does work in current Windows, in 64-bit Windows. We actually have an editor for it. So I managed to dig
Wait,
one.
NBA Action 98 works for Windows 10?
I'm not sure. I haven't tried it on 10 yet. I know it does on 7 64-bit, but we do have an editor. The only thing is the editor is 16-bit, so it might not work. But you might have to use a virtual machine for that. But we do have an editor, a roster editor for that program. I was able to find one on an old, I think it was an Angel Fire site that was still there. So I managed to grab that and upload it to our download sections for safekeeping.
Okay, when we get off this podcast, I'm going to buy NBA Action 98. I've never played NBA Action 98. I always had NBA Fast Break 98. And yeah, so thank you. That's another game I'll be picking up.
Basically the same game with different colored menus, and everything else is the same. But it does have different menus and a different name. But it is, apart from that, and a PC release, obviously. But that is a game that obviously you love, and I need to cover for Wayback Wednesday at some point. The dual situation there with those games. You know, we go back to these games to finish unfinished business or just to get some nostalgia or whatever. And I was talking to you about it we were talking about it before we started recording and also earlier in the week about, and I brought up going through phases with retro gaming and just getting obsessed with a certain title again and just going back to, obviously we have our favorites, but then just having this wave of nostalgia. For a while there, NBA Live 2002, I was just, had to write about it in every Wayback Wednesday I did a series of articles about it, and it was... I was really stuck on that game for a while as far as that was my nostalgic game that I was thinking of. I was still playing current ones, but that was the game I was thinking about for a while. 2003 and 04 has been there. More recently, it may be 09 and 10. Just these games that I've been thinking about, that have been in the conscious and that I've wanted to go back and play. Do you go through the same phases, or am I just strange? Well, I may be strange, but for other reasons.
My phase right now is 2K7 and 2K8. And I think the biggest reason is because it was such a different graphic direction. And it was the new beginnings on the new console, you know, 2K6, 2K7, and 2K8. Right now I have 2K7 and 2K8 for my PlayStation 3, but I wanted to be able to play on PC. So as you know, I got the emulator. So my obsession, every night I've been going in and messing around on 2K7 and 2K8. And again, it's this thing where you go back and you look at these games and you look at the art direction and you look at the rosters, but you know, you look at what they did for the body models and how they did the lighting and how they did the shading and how the shorts move and how, if the hair moves like it does on 2K7 and 2K8 with Steve Nash and whatnot. And it's just, you get tied up in it. And for me, I don't know how long this obsession will last. It's been, I think, a week and a half. But I've been putting on those games every single night. So, no, you're not weird.
For those reasons, anyway.
Yeah, for those reasons. And do you know what I'm going to do? If I put on Fox Sports Basketball for PC and it actually works for my PC and I'm intrigued by it, I will probably be on that game messing around with it for like a week or two minimum. So.
It's cool to be able to do that. And the other thing that I've been thinking about, because I often relate games to the seasons they're set in and the time of my life it was. And I think with NBA Live 2002 in particular, that was the game that came out the first it came out late 2001, obviously. That was when I took over the NLSC. August 2001 is when I got the NLSC gig. I was running the NBA Live domain before that, and Tim Gay, handed me the keys to the largest NBA Live fan site and now basketball video gaming fan site on the web. And here I am, 18, 19 years later, still running the thing. Been running the NLSC longer than I haven't been running the NLSC, actually, which is overwhelming to think about as someone in their mid-30s. But I think it reminds me of that time of taking over the site at that time, and that was the new game, seeing what it had. Of course, there was the controversy because it was the first console-only release since Showdown. But also, it was the year I was finished, 2002, the year I was finishing up high school and turning 18. So it was a chain, a milestone year in my life as well. So it all kind of ties in there. And of course, Jordan had come back with the Wizards, and how I wished he kind of wished he was with the Bulls, obviously, and everything. But how it was a very memorable time in my life, for better or worse, and for all those things. And in 2003 again, his final year in the league, and my first year out of high school in the real world, sort of, so to speak. So it also relates back to that, and also what happens in the real NBA, and just having that nostalgia again sometimes for the baby Bulls with Ben Gordon and Heinrich and Deng and everyone, and just that's what so a game in the 2006 the NBA Live 06 or 2005 era appeals to me for that reason, and just remembering those old players and dusting off those old games and playing that, and I think that also plays into my phases that when I remember what it was like to watch the NBA at that time, or what I was feeling in my life at that time, and sometimes, just as people listen to music from that era to reminisce, I think I do that with basketball video games.
Well, it's funny, two things. One, sometimes you go back and play those games too, and then you're like, man, I love this game. Have you ever done that? You're like, you're playing a game, and it's like, I see, obviously there's nostalgia, but this game doesn't hold up as well as I thought. That's happened to me, a few times.
It is funny the different reactions you have. It's the, oh, this is about as good as I remembered it. This is familiar and nice, and it's fun to revisit. Then there's the, wow, this is better than I thought, especially for a game that you didn't spend a lot of time with, like we were talking about before, Unfinished Business. If you find a game that you didn't spend a lot of time with, think, oh, it's actually better than I remembered, and it's got more than I thought. I think we've also touched on it in previous shows, but the idea of revisiting a game that you, with fresh eyes and without the expectations of it being a new game, sometimes you appreciate it more.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, and the other thing too, I wanted to just mention, you said your feelings about, you're talking about your timeline and you're talking about 2003 and you're talking about Jordan coming back and all that stuff. No, I didn't take over the NLSC, but those things you were going through, we were going through at the exact same age during the same time.
Well, that's right,
I just
yeah.
find that interesting because, you're talking about graduating high school. We graduated the same time. And you're talking about entering adulthood, and then you're talking about the Jordan coming back, and you wish he's with the Bulls. I wished he was with the Bulls, and I'm not even a Chicago Bulls fan.
Yeah.
But yeah, just a
No,
lot of parallels.
we
It
do
just
have a
kind of
lot
brought
of,
me back.
it is funny, we discussed this on and off air, but we do have a lot of parallels being the same age and going through that same, very different experiences growing up on other side of the world, different cultures, things like that, but having that same basketball and basketball gaming experiences has been very interesting to discover all these years later. And of course, you've had the positive experience, the oh, that's familiar experience, or oh, that's better. And then, of course, as you just alluded to, the oh my God, this really, I love this game and it was fun at the time, but man, has this not aged well? Is this aged like milk? And this doesn't hold up, or this was actually kind of terrible. I've been there. I've been there, man.
It's terrible, yeah. And you don't get to the point where you're like, I don't get to the point where like, well, this game sucks. It's like I
Oh, sure,
understand
yeah.
what it was for its time, but then I'm like, man, I had a lot of fun with this game, but I don't think I'm gonna have that fun now if I tried to, start a season or start a mode or anything like that. And one game that stood out that was better than I remembered was NBA Courtside. I think it was NBA Courtside 2002 for the Nintendo GameCube.
Mm-hmm.
I put that on and I was like, I remember playing this and this is better than I remembered.
Yep.
You know, with the animations and the graphics and, you know, what they tried to do with it. And even the menus were cool. Like, it was a like they had the gears and it was just cool. So that's the opposite. But I'm trying to think of a game that happened to me recently. And I put on a game and I'm like, oh, this is not as good as I remembered.
I actually do have a couple of recent examples that I can give. And it also relates to unfinished business. I had this grand idea that before the server shut down for NBA Live 15, that I was going to go back and get the achievements for getting 100 wins, 100 challenges finished, 100 challenges finished in Ultimate Team. And I was, you know, this could be a great Wave 8 Wednesday idea where I look back at Ultimate Team and I finish this and I do a challenge for Wave 8 Wednesday, and it'll be something a little bit different but familiar at the same time, half retrospective, half challenge. And I went back and tried to play one game and I couldn't. And at the time, I loved 15, you know, and knowing its flaws, I still had a lot of fun with it. On one hand, it showed that Live has improved since Live 15, which was nice to see. But at the same time, I tried to go back to a game that I spent a lot of time with in Ultimate Team that year, and I just couldn't. I could not finish that unfinished business because I just couldn't play that game anymore. Not for fun. Not for any extended period of time. Not for as long as I would have needed to do to complete the challenge and to do the article. So I had to scrap that idea. And I think some of the... There's obviously earlier games that have done it as well, but even very recently, of course, with Live Struggles, yeah, that was a game that I did enjoy for what it was, with the games that have come since and 2K and Live, I just couldn't play that game anymore. I couldn't finish the business.
Yeah, and to give you an example for me in that same regard, there was a game that my friend Will in high school I would always go over his house, and we would play the early NBA 2Ks, and I think NBA 2K2 was the one that we played like a ton. So I went back and I was like, I want to put on this game. I hadn't played it in a long time. And I remember him and I having an absolute blast with NBA 2K2. And I put on this game and I'm like, this doesn't do it for me. The dribbling, that how simple the dribbling was and how out of control it felt, and how shots on the move felt, and how the driving felt incredibly scripted, and you like just run over the defense and score constantly and all that stuff. I'm like, man, this game doesn't hold up well.
Yeah.
But then I went back and played Live 2003 and I had the opposite reaction. I was like, hey, this is still pretty good.
It's funny,
I had fun with this game. Yeah.
When you go back to those old games without expectations and just that familiar, and they've talked about, there's been studies on it about why we go back to these things and why nostalgia is such a big thing, how it's comforting, how it's familiar, how will, you know, you might buy, you know, who buys DVDs these days? Well, people who want to not have things disappear off streaming services for a start, but DVDs or Blu-rays, why you might buy some new ones or something, pick them up on sale, and then you've got them in the collection, but you pull out all your old favorites and watch those instead, or there's new things on TV, but you're streaming or watching DVDs, Blu-rays of your favorite shows from 10 years ago or more. There is that, why we keep defaulting to the familiar, even though we've got something new right there on hand. You know, it's not that we don't have to go out and we don't have to seek out the new. It's got it right there, but we stick with the old. You know what you're getting. There's that familiarity there, and it's when you go back to an old game, you have that. You know, you don't have the expectations. You know what it is. You know how it disappointed you at the time. You know how it pleased you at the time, and you can just play it for what it is. But sometimes, like you just pointed out, it gets to a certain age. Some things that just haven't aged well enough. Their concepts, you know, or their tech just wasn't good enough, wasn't well enough done at the time. That it might have worked well at the time, but years later, it certainly doesn't.
My brother is the opposite of me in a way. He can't go back and play some of those games. He goes, his thing is, D, you know, ever since, you know, 2K14 for this gen, he goes, things just got better. you know, for him as far as like gameplay and like what you can do with the gameplay. It's hard to get him to go back and play games with me that are older. I was able to get him to come back and play 2K7, but do you think he complained about it during while we were playing it? You can bet he was complaining about it, and he was thinking a lot of things were silly. But I look at it, I think, through a clearer lens than him, and I can accept some of the game's limitations, understanding what the goal of the game was, and I can still get enjoyment out of the competition. But he has trouble with that. So
it's funny also to look back at concepts that were abandoned after a couple of years, or that evolved into something else. But especially the ones that were dropped, seeing things and thinking, this was a really good idea. Why didn't they keep going with it?
Right. And that's the thing, too. If you go back and you look at Live 10, like I was talking about, you know, they had size ups. And I said this on the prior podcast, is, you know, we had size ups in Live 10. Why didn't you keep going with that?
Yeah.
You know, why go back on the authenticity?
NBA League 11 ruined a lot of things, but...
Yeah, it did. You go back and look at 2K6 and 2K7, Nash's hair is moving, right? And then you go back, so you go back and play those, and you're like, man, this is cool. You know, Nash is dribbling up the court, and his hair is, like, bouncing up and down, like we used to watch in real life when he would bring up the ball. But they took that out of the 2K games, and I think they took it out starting in 2K9. They removed the hair movement, and then it didn't get brought back until they attempted it on 2K17, I want to say, and then they patched it out because it was causing issues. Like Dirk Nowitzki's hair was able to move, and then all of a sudden they put a patch through and it couldn't. And then I think this year Jay Crowder's like his ponytail, I don't know what else to call it. We're going to call it
braids.
A ponytail.
Braids, I guess.
Braids. But it bounces up and down. So you see that now, and it's like, hey, wait a minute. They had this back on 2K6.
Yeah.
You go back and you see cool things like that. You also see cool things like different types of shorts movement and different type of shadowing and certain different types of animations and stuff like that. You're like, man, this is cool. Why did they take that out?
There's a video I posted because I got some screenshots and video of Adam Morrison in NBA Live 07 for an upcoming article for Wayback Wednesday, which I also alluded to, the mustache commercial and other things, the other commercials he did for NBA Live 07. So I was playing that for a little bit, and yeah, as you alluded to, NBA Live 07 is definitely down there or up there with the worst, or down there with the worst, however you want to phrase that. And something I forgot about Live 07 is how easy it was to blow dunks, because I just went up with him for one, and he just pounded it right into the front of the rim. And
missed so many dunks on Live 07.
Yeah.
Sometimes multiple in a row. Yeah.
It was crazy. It really was. And there were some awkward animations that at the time didn't look good, but in particular, they've aged worse than PS2 animations, I believe.
No, they do. That's not something, you know, people, then I want to put this out again, you know, I'll say again, people saying that things get better in time, with time, just like everything gets better with time. Listen, go back and look at the dunk animations on NBA Live 2000, and then go look at the dunk animations on Live 07, and you're going to see a major decline. A major, major decline. In fact, the ones on Live 2003, the dunk animations look pretty good, by the way.
Yeah.
06?
06 to 07 was, especially across generations, was quite disappointing.
Yeah. And you know, that's the other thing, too, is everything gets better at time. Well, if you actually go back and you shoot on games like Live 2000 and Live 2003 and 2004, like, the shooting animations feel much better than the unbelievable... awkward rocket shooting information, signature shooting in Live 07. So yeah. I just can't stand.
There's a hitch to them, I should say.
Yeah, and the dunks too. The dunks are complete. That is rocket dunks to a T in Live 07. They're just
and not even rocket dunks that go in half the time. So
I think that's one of my biggest frustrations, is and we talk about this with the real basketball, is just people saying that everything gets better with time, but I can point out so many times in history where things went backwards. So.
Well, not every change is a good one, and that's why further changes are made. It's why these things continue to change and evolve as people realize, okay, that was a wrong direction. It's why fashions change. You know, it's if everything is new and if nothing sticks, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, has fashion really gotten better?
Well, it's better. Well, at least NBA players aren't wearing the short shorts anymore, I suppose.
Well, they're trying to bring it back, I think. But we'll see what we'll see what happens. I mean, they're trying to bring back afros and stuff like that too, I think. Either way, hey, listen, I love a good fro.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if somebody wants to bring back the Julius Erving fro and do it right, I'm all for it.
The mustaches of the late 80s, early 90s. That's, you know, well, that could.
Oh, you mean the reason they're plumbers? I mean,
plumber stash.
Yeah, the plumber stash, the Brad Davis mustache, the Kelly Tripucka plumber mustache.
Yeah, that's the one. That's Live 07 is a game that I don't have a lot of unfinished business with. It's not a game I could go back and play for any amount of time. But I did find that with 2002 when I recreated my franchise with the Kings, and I played it through to the end. But I did simulate a lot as well. I basically simulated in the playoffs. Simulated to the playoffs, played a few of the playoff games, played the series clinching games, but it was at a time when, you know, obviously I wanted to play other games, wanted to create other content, other responsibilities in general life away from video games. So I could only spend so much time with it, but there was also only so much time that I wanted to spend with it. It was fun to revisit and play for a little bit, and I also did another Way Back Wednesday where, and again, I guess this was the whole Jordan Wizards and Live 2002 obsession for a while that I had there, was I recreated his 30,000th point game against the Bulls, ironic, and played that in Live 2002 for Way Back Wednesday. You can go back and check that out sometime, everybody. Please do. So it's fun to do that and just to do something special like that, but to play a whole season of Live 2002, I couldn't do.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. And that's the thing is, when I go back and play those games, It's not as much about unfinished business anymore. It's more of, it's really cool to get reacquainted. Yeah. It's really cool to put on the game, feel the gameplay mechanics, look at the art, and kind of reminisce about that. It's not something where I could literally go back. I had somebody ask me to do that too. They were like, "Hey, can you do like a YouTube series on Live 10 and like play a season?" I don't think I could do it. I don't think I could dedicate the time to play a full season on that game. And I mean, that's sad in a way, but at least I can still go back and, you know, and play a game myself or with my brothers and, you know, maybe we can make a few memories still with the game.
Also, if you have spent a lot of time with it back in the day, a lot of closure, there's a sense of closure you have on that time. You can open that door again, reopen that box and, you know, the treasure chest, if you will, and play with that treasure. But at the same time, you've got those new experiences, those new games you want to do. You've got unfinished business in current games. Obviously, you're playing the current season with 2K20, playing a season in 2K20. So, you know, there's things that new experiences that you want to have. You've already done that. You know, some people say, and obviously, I cover retro games a lot for Way Back Wednesday, and we talk about them on the podcast. Here we are talking about them again. Sometimes people say, well, why aren't you talking about this? Why aren't you talking about more about Live 2004? Or why aren't you talking about 2K11 or something on the podcast? And certainly we appreciate the suggestions and don't want to shut them down. But sometimes, you know, we can reminisce from time to time. But week to week, there isn't really anything new you can say about an old game. Unless you've had a recent experience with it. You know, we've already talked about that game when it was current.
Yeah, especially with the Live 25th anniversary episodes.
Yes.
I think we talked about Live 2004 and whatnot at length, like the whole series.
Yeah.
As far as like a good example of what you're talking about, as far as closure, I have closure with Live 2004. The amount of play that game got is nuts. The amount of memories that we created, all three of us, me and my two brothers, is just, it's endless. So I have closure with Live 2004. So that's nice. But yeah, I agree with you. It's tough to continue to talk about, because sometimes you feel like you're going to talk about the same things over and over and over again when you're covering these older games. So yeah, that's a tough thing to do. I think the good thing though is you can still use those games in context with the new games.
True.
In discussion with the new games, and you can talk about them in a historic way without having to constantly break them down.
If you had to pick a game, what's the oldest game you think that you could, if you got sick of 2K20 and said, okay, until 2K21 comes out and I checked it out and see if I like it, how far could you go back and still play that regularly as if it were the latest game?
Well, my brothers have to be impacted, so I mean, the majority of my gaming is with them. I'd say it's mostly with Nick because he lives with me. So I'd say, what could I get him to accept? I'd probably say, for Nick, he would be willing to go back to NBA 2K11,
solid,
and do an entire season. We've talked about it. So that's pretty good. That's almost a decade, which is crazy to think about.
Yeah.
If it were me, what would I be able to go back and do? I have to be honest, this is crazy, but I would be willing to go back to the original NBA 2K and do a season.
Hmm.
I like that game. I actually, I still have it. And I really think that they were doing a good job with the gameplay. It's fast. I like the graphics. I like the feeling of it, as far as like there's no input lag, everything's reactive. I love that season. I like the players that were playing at the time. So I think I could go back to the original NBA 2K and actually play a season. What about you?
I think as far as playing full seasons and that, I'd probably be dusting off my Dynasty save from 06 PC. I think that's probably as far as back as I could go. And that, even that's getting harder as the years go by, because you've got more expectations of a franchise mode and gameplay. I think I could do 06, possibly 2005. 2005, as much as I played it, I didn't get through a season, so that would be cool if I did that, even if I'd updated it to the current rosters, which is always a pipe dream, even all these years later. I can still go back to NBA Jam Tournament Edition. I can play that very easily. We talk about obsessions. Went back to that for about 3 or 4 weeks in a row for way back Wednesday, doing challenges and things like that. So I can definitely do that. 2K, I think for me probably 2K11, but more likely 2K13. 2K13 is a game that I really love. I've still got a my career save going on that, so it'd be fun to dust that off from time to time. But again, why would I play that when I've got a more modern one as well? It'd probably be doing something like playing Association, which I didn't do as much of and regret because of how deep that was, and how Association was everything I wanted Dynasty to be in Live, but then Live kind of moved away from really putting the time and effort into Dynasty and franchise, unfortunately. So that's probably as far back as I could go. I loved Live 95, I loved Live 96. I could go back and I could play them. I could have a session with them. I could have a weekend maybe, or an evening. I don't think I could make that a regular part of the rotation again, though. It gets to a certain point where the age shows, and again, you've done everything to it. You don't have, unless you've got a save file that does have unfinished business. And I had a 1998 season with my 1998 roster update for Live 96 that was stored in a floppy disk, which is now long gone. And I could even, obviously there are ways to get a USB floppy drive to copy it. And man, I wish I had that. It's one of my, and that's something I'd like to talk about at some point as well, the saga, a Requiem for Lost Saves, because I have had them over the years, as I've alluded to earlier in the show, and man, you know, I wish I, if I had that, I'd probably spend more time with it. But again, it's when you do have, when you feel like you have finished business, when you have gotten everything you can out of a game, it's you're talking about an evening or a weekend in the rotation, but it's cool. And again, I'm glad to know that I'm not the only one who will go through these phases of remembering a game and suddenly feeling very nostalgic for it. And like, okay, I've got to pull that out and make that part of the rotation temporarily. But as far as months at a time, probably, yeah, 2K11, I think, would be the earliest for 2K, 06 for PC for Live, regularly, and but NBA Jam I can go back to any time because the Jam games hold up like anything.
Well, you know what? There's two things. First off, it's really funny that you say obviously floppy disks are long gone. The new computer that I bought, like I talked about on a prior podcast, it literally didn't have a CD, a DVD player, so I had to like go out.
That's
or
very,
a CD player.
Yeah, very common.
So I had to like go out and get a USB one.
Yeah.
And so I have a USB player sitting on my computer that game player that I literally have to have plugged in via USB, and that's how I play 2K9 and 2K10. But anyway, NBA, you know what's unbelievable at NBA Jam? When you put on the game, the music pulls you in.
Oh, it does. Yeah.
It's just, it literally just pulls you in, and the sound effects. And when you get into the game, Tim Kitro and whatnot. And I still remember my NBA Jam for Sega CD, the music. It's in my head right now, and yep. I love it. It makes you want to put on the game. They did such a great job with the atmosphere of those games, the presentation and whatnot. And it just pulls you in.
It's why I think Playgrounds really should have taken more cues from Jam. In gameplay, in concept, and obviously commentary and music and everything, just that whole atmosphere, they got it so right, and over 25 years ago.
And it's still great.
It holds up. That's playable, yeah.
Holds up, and the gameplay holds up. It's still better than any arcade game, really, as far as gameplay.
I agree.
It's unbelievable how it holds up.
Is there a game that's not in your collection that you wish you had that you could go back to? Either you've had it or
basketball. Yeah.
There you go. You got it. Yeah. But apart from that, is there anyone that you either never played that you'd like to get your hands on, or one that you maybe traded in or lost over the years that you wish you still had?
Oh yeah, there's a couple. One's NCAA Final Four '99 with Paul Pierce on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
With Quinn Buckner on the call. I'll never forget that game. I wish I still had that. That's for PlayStation. There's NBA Shootout with Stephon Marbury on the cover. I wish I still had that. I wish that I had NBA Live 98 for the PC still. A lot of memories with that game. There's definitely games in the past. And my brother kind of makes fun of me for this, but I don't think it would be hard to explain how often I'm putting on old games. We have multiple video game systems set up in front of our TV in the living room. And if I can't get them on the PC, I'm putting on the consoles, and I'll be the one who's throwing on the original NBA 2K followed by throwing on, you know, Live 2004, followed by 2K7. I love just going back and playing them, so I'm definitely going to be adding to my collection.
It's a lot of fun to do. I've done that in recent years. I had a friend gift me a PlayStation 3, which I'm really excited about because I can import games for that, and specifically college basketball games, because they were not released outside of the US and Canada. Back in the day, they didn't have the international distribution rights. It was a whole thing. And of course, because those consoles were region locked, can't play an NTSC games on PAL systems. So PS3 was not region locked. Xbox 360 was, so I couldn't import, but now I do. So I'm trying to source some affordable copies of things like NCAA basketball by EA, college hoops by 2K, and looking to expand my collection there. I've seen a couple I've got my eye on. It's just maybe, you know, other bills that need to be paid before I've expand the collection a little bit. But I'm looking forward to doing that and playing some games. Again, that I didn't get to play that first time around. I actually covered the pre-release, the previous season of NCAA Basketball 10 from EA without knowing that I wouldn't be getting the game without actually ever playing the game. But of course, we were getting the stuff from EA at the time, so I was able to do it in a previous season for the NLSC, but never actually played the game myself. But if I can get my hands on it, looking forward to doing that at a reasonable cost, of course. I mean, NBA Elite 11 would be really cool to have a copy of, obviously, as a collector's sake, but I don't really want to. I don't have $3,000 to drop on the copies that are floating around, so I might have to pass on that one. Do have the demo on 360, but yeah, I'm looking forward to expanding the collection. It's always cool to get something new like that and to either play an old favorite again or to play something you've never played before. And it's been rewarding to do for Wayback Wednesday. I mean, it's fun content to produce. But the reason I produce that content, as you do with your YouTube channel and as we and posting in the forum and talking about it, and of course here on the podcast, is it's simply fun from a personal standpoint to go back and to revisit old favorites and to see how they hold up and how they don't, or to see to find a game that you haven't played before and see what it was like and see what you missed, because I was very NBA Live orientated for a long time and missed out on other games.
Yeah. I had a question for you, actually, about that, about the college game scene. Did you ever play College Slam?
I have actually played that, yes. I played that on an emulator, yeah.
I was obsessed with that game for a while. Of course, being a fan of the NBA Jam series, College Slam was, for those who don't know, College Slam was the college version of NBA Jam.
Yep.
And it's another game that had music that absolutely dragged you in when you first put on the game. Had a really cool box art of like a basketball crunching, like biting into a rim.
That's right, yeah.
And you could like rename the players
yep.
on the teams. And it was the NBA Jam gameplay. And it was really fun. And they had so many schools. And you could go through a tournament. And my brothers and I played that a ton. The other one, too, that we played a lot was Coach K College Basketball, which was basically the exact same. It was the college version of NBA Live 96.
Yes, yes.
So it was the same gameplay, all the schools. You had Mike Krzyzewski show up, like right when you put on the game. He's part of the menus. But just a little fun facts for anybody else who doesn't know that those two games were out there, and they were a lot of fun. So
the funny thing about that is there's footage of the backboard shattering, because backboard shattering was in Coach K. And it's there's footage, because it looks like NBA Live footage, because, again, same engine, etc., it fed rumors for a long time that you could shatter the backboard in NBA Live, because the screenshots were out there. It looked like the Super Nintendo version of Live 96. So it led to those to rumors like that. Have you seen, either in person or in the YouTube video, the double shatter glitch in that game?
No, I didn't, but I remember shattering a lot of backboards and Coach K.
There's a glitch where the backboard and the rim stays broken, and you can still try and dunk on it. So it's I'll send you the video. It's kind of funny. College, that's actually, you know, as much as I love doing that interview with Tim Kitzrow and I'm proud of that interview I did on the podcast, I do regret not asking about College Slam, because he did do the voiceover for that. But little things like changing Monster Jam to Mega Dunk was kind of funny.
Yeah, I think the best thing, though, about College Slam, I think you would agree, is that they stayed true to the NBA Jam roots.
Yes, yes, it was still the same, yeah.
It's still, I mean, you can go from both of those games, playing both of them, and you have the same experience, and that's cool, other than obviously the college teams and whatnot. But I don't know of other commentary. I do know what, like, that change that you're talking about, but I don't know about other commentary differences. I'd have to go back and play it.
It's they kind of changed the tone a little bit, so it was more college-like, I suppose. But it's yeah. If you play it again, you'll see some of the differences. But it's no, I definitely remember that game, learning about it years later. Because again, we didn't get the college games here, so it wasn't until I'd played an emulated version of it that I found out about it. And it's and also things like the Super Dunk Shot, the Japanese version of World League Basketball or NCAA Basketball by HAL Software, a game that you and I both enjoy in different ways, because it's different versions.
Ahead of its time. That yeah. Game's graphics were, I mean, there was no crowd.
Yeah.
It was just blue.
The Mode 7 chip on Super Nintendo was ahead of its time.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, the thing, people talk about the 2K view and whatnot. Hey, that was a behind view.
And it followed and rotated.
Yeah, and it rotated when possessions changed and whatnot. And honestly, at the time, it was pretty damn realistic. You know, we really thought it looked great. And that's another game, though, that I think ages well. Like, if you go back and play that game, the shooting mechanics age well, the passing ages well. I think part of it is the camera view, which is now so popular now, that ages well. So
you've also got control over the different dunks you do. You can by holding the D-pad in different directions, you trigger specific dunks, which is really cool.
So cool, yeah. Because like if you pushed back on it would be like a back slam.
Yep, reverse dunk there, yeah, and twisting like Jordan-esque kind of twisty dunk and things like that. Yeah, really cool. But the Japanese version, as I believe I've told you about before, you might have already known, is basically a knockoff NBA game with the Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan. You've got Larry Birdie on the Boston Celeries and things like that, and the Los Angeles Lasers. So it's you would not get away with it these days, but it's just back in the day, this knockoff NBA game that I wish we got it in Australia, because it's just so funny.
I would have preferred that. I mean, I do like the college, the NCAA basketball game, and I have a lot of memory using Georgetown with their names. They had Larson and Cox and Nancy and all these, and Tapp was my bench stud.
Yep.
He'd score like 30 for me every game. But I would have rather been able to, because I love the NBA. I would have rather been able to get immersed in something, even if it wasn't fully accurate, even if they led on. And kind of ripped it off. It would have been cooler to have that, probably.
It is. I as much as I like that fictional World League basketball, it was cool to have a fake. It would have been even better to have the fake NBA stuff. But yeah, and then again, interesting differences between versions of the game in different regions of the world. But I would love to get my hands on those college games and spend some time with them. Obviously, we'll do a Wayback Wednesday on them if I can do that. But yeah, expanding the collection is a lot of fun, especially when you can do it at a pretty good price, when you can not break the bank in getting some of these old gems that you loved or would like to check out. It's very fun to do, not just as a content creator, but just simply as somebody who likes to revisit those old games and check them out and again to wrap up the whole unfinished business thing. Even just checking out those games and seeing what they're all about and spending a bit of time with them. Even that's closure and finishing some business in a way, and it's something I really enjoy just to even play those games for an evening or two and be able to dust them off again when I feel like checking something out or again writing an article or doing a video on them. That's it's absolutely worth doing it for that. So it's why I think retro gaming does still resonate with us. I know a lot of people don't really look at sports retro games and sports games don't always have great resale value because of that, because people want the latest and greatest and the updated rosters and everything, but when you have that nostalgia for a certain season and the certain players that were playing, like we were talking about with NBA 2K, loving the players that were there at the late 90s, early 2000s, and that new crop of stars as the old ones, and some of the old ones are still hanging around at the time as well, it's, that's such a big part of it, and not everybody understands it. You know, you mentioned that your brother's not really big into it, but, you and I, obviously, it's something we could do, and again, something we can get on the show and talk about, because obviously we have a mutual interest in that that activity.
Well, sometimes unfinished, like you said, I alluded to it, sometimes unfinished business is a game that you have never played. And because, you're a basketball game junkie. You're a basketball game collector.
Yeah.
So it's like somebody, it's like somebody who has a car collection and they're just collecting, all these cars. But there's one car out there that they never got to drive. And they never had, and they were never, and it's related to some of the other cars that they have. That's unfinished business for them to not, they want to be able to get their hands on that.
Yeah, completing a collection. Absolutely.
It's completing the collection. So that's the way I look at it as far as like trying games I haven't tried before or going back to games that I maybe didn't play a lot or that I want to see again. So I wish more people would be into some of the older games, ones that we're talking about, like Fast Break 98.
Yeah.
Because I feel like an alien sometimes when I'm not talking to you, because other people don't really know what I'm talking about. Like, if I bring up these older games, if I bring up College Slam to the average person, do you think they know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's kind of obscure.
Yeah, kind of obscure. So sometimes I do wish that more people were, but guess, hey, we have this podcast. So.
Have the podcast. We've got Wayback Wednesday. We've got Twitter. So look, you can follow us on Twitter, and we'll give out our handles as usual very shortly. So you can follow us there as we will be talking, no doubt, about Fox Sports NBA Basketball 2000 in the coming weeks. And, You know what? If it resonates with us that much, maybe we'll do a podcast on it. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah. Listen, I will do – we should do a podcast on all games live. I'd say – let's see. We do a podcast on all games live 2004 and earlier. How about that? That'd be fun.
Absolutely. We can –
can't even bring up new games. Wouldn't even be allowed.
But, yeah, we did the 25th anniversary podcast, of course, episode number 301 and 302, which we invite you to go back and check out. But, yeah, it's hard to run out of topics, especially when we do have this huge library and this collection between us of games. But, no, I'm interested to hear what you think of the game, because I do have my – I'll go into more detail when I do my Wayback Wednesday article on it. I think it's got a lot of merit in it. It's got some interesting things, like it's got the random team selection, which wasn't that common at the time. So it's again, you see these little interesting details that they have and the things that they were doing that Live wasn't. Live 2000 is still the superior game. I saw somebody on Twitter mention that it was competing with Live, which it was technically, but it was Live 2000 in graphics and features is so far ahead of it. And I will stick by that. But it is interesting to look back on these games for better or worse and look at some of the funny things about them, and some of those faces were just the cheery expression on Kobe's face as he stared at the ceiling running in to the during the introductions, and of course everything with Kobe is a bit bittersweet at this time, but yeah, it certainly made me laugh because it was it was such a sign of the times that the face was not particularly, I mean, it looks good, but it's also got an expression that's not always, you know, he's falling to the floor and he's still smiling his head off.
It's funny because somebody behind a computer or a team of people behind a computer who are making this game thought this looked good.
Yeah.
Like thought it looked great. Like it's somebody in their mind was like, man, this looks great. And then they released it. And that fascinates me.
Yeah.
But like some of these older, especially in 2000 when things were getting a little bit better tech wise.
True. Yeah.
You know, look what Live 2000 was able to achieve. But yeah, I find it amusing that there was one, or obviously more than one, multiple people who were like, man, this looks good. So.
No doubt. It's just, yeah. Again, a sign of the times. Just, what passed for a good face back then, and not realizing that maybe a neutral expression is the way to go.
Yeah, exactly. The smiley faces is what killed me on the screenshots. I looked at them again before this call because you sent some over to me, and I'm just like, this is hilarious.
So stay tuned for more content like that, and of course we will revisit this on the podcast. Always fun to reminisce about our favorite games and games that we didn't know we liked until we got them.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again. This is I love going down memory lane and talking about some of, especially the games in the 90s. I really enjoy talking about the games in the 90s.
I think sometimes they're underrated because it's a lot of the concepts were established very early on. The technology wasn't there to make them as good as they are today. But and hey, if nothing else, they weren't trying to milk us for extra money with recurrent revenue mechanics. So they do have that going for them.
And they were releasing more games.
That's true.
More companies were releasing basketball games, so we had a lot of options.
So we will continue to talk about those on the NLSC podcast. Of course, Wayback Wednesday comes out every week as well. I encourage you to check that out. I've got a bit of a buffer built up for my features, Derek. It feels nice to have over a month's worth of features ready to go. I just have to decide which order I want to post them in. But yes, it's something I've tried to be more organized about in the past 6 months or so, is getting that buffer and... Got some good things coming. I feel like people are going to enjoy them.
I'll say again, I don't know how you do it every week. Not to kiss your butt, but I just don't understand how you continue to, you know, pump out articles three times a week, you know, sometimes more. But it's just, you know, all the power to you. It's impressive.
Well, like I say, I'm crazy in that way, I suppose. It's an obsession, but one I'd like to think isn't too unhealthy. But yes, you can check those out along with the other original content, Monday Tip-Off, Wayback Wednesday, Friday 5, and of course this NLSC podcast each and every week. that we come out on Sundays Australian time. You can keep streaming it on the LSE, of course. You can also find us on various podcatching apps, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher. Search for NLC Podcast. Look for our logo. That will be us. Feel free to leave us a hopefully a positive review on those platforms as well. It definitely helps out with our both our ego and visibility. But once again, as long as you're tuning in and enjoying the show, wherever you do, that is the main thing. Where can we find you on socials, D?
I'm on Twitter, mostly, at D4384 with the D Brown No Look Dunk logo as my profile picture. I'm also on YouTube with that same profile picture, D4Three. I've been uploading a lot of gameplay videos lately, so you can check those out. I'm on the NLVC as well, the NBA Live Veterans Committee, and the NLSC as D4Three.
Excellent. You can also find me on Twitter at AndrewNLSC. The NLSC itself is on Facebook and Twitter at the NLSC. We're on Instagram, NLSC Basketball. We also have a presence on YouTube, NBA Live Series Center, our old name there. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, NBA-Live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that is all for episode number 314 of the NLSC Podcast. Thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.